You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville, and the Beaches, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Vieira, 94.7 FM, and W264AS, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends here on WWBC AM 1510, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. And we have such an action-packed show today. My friend Anna Ishkamani, who is the state rep for District 47, is here.
Hello.
And she's running again. Hello.
Oh, yeah, never stops.
Yes. And then we have, so we have to call you a politician. No, that's it.
Right.
And then we have our friend Valletta Cameron is here, and she's an attorney here in town in Brevard County, Florida. And she's going to be talking with our audience about so many things, foster children, legal aid, what she does, education, helping children to get to college and vocational and technical schools, all the great things that she's giving back to Brevard County. And of course, Ellen Little is here,
yes,
my co-host, who helps me in the front with the at the show right here,
right,
taking pictures
right,
and everything else, and behind
and we're
the
gonna
scenes.
Do, I think we're going to do a little Facebook Live while we're doing the show today, and I'll just kind of do a little clip of the show today. So if you want to tune in on Facebook Live, you'll get to see everybody.
And Ellen, this is your chance to tell our audience all the stuff that's going on with our show and where it's been posted and all that.
Yeah, it's posted on our website, which is cedamediainc.com, and it also transfers over to iTunes, which we get quite a few downloads, usually in the 2,000 downloads. So thank all of you for who are subscribing to the show. And you can also see us on Facebook as well, because we put them on the Facebook page as well.
Right. So that's, I mean, so much to talk about. And we tell our friends that our show is about, it's a fun show. It's very unscripted, very educational, and quite valuable for our community. We talk with people who want to write a book, sell a book, maybe talk about why they wrote a book. We talk with people who have businesses, who want to open a business, why they want to open a business. We speak with politicians. We speak with nonprofits. And of lately, we've had people that want to come on the show that are calling in from all over the place. We have a few people calling in from LA next month. Mm-hmm. And the following month, we have someone calling in from New York. And it's nice because everybody is trying to do something for humanity. Mm-hmm. Something happens when you get to this point where it's called the secret of self-realization, where you understand why you're on this planet, what is the reason you're here, and what's your purpose. And most people want others to be loved and appreciated, secure, have a job, and just that's it.
Sure. Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
So we're giving back.
Yes.
And so anybody saw the debate?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy.
As a matter of fact, we saw Anna on TV,
yes,
like hosting one of the watch parties, I
yes,
think.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That's
you know what?
Funny.
I watched a debate and I thought, I mean, we all came away with something, right? But then I'm like, you know what? They're all good people. They're running for office. They're trying to make a difference. Some of them are going to say things right now because they want to be on the top. I mean, I ran for office and you did and you won. Mm-hmm. And it's not easy. It's not easy.
It's not easy.
So you got to cut them a little slack sometime,
yeah,
right?
And I was excited by just the proactive energy, right? Like,
yeah,
the fact that we're painting a picture for an alternative direction for our country that we have now. That gave me a lot of hope.
Right. And you can do a Facebook Live so people can see a different Anna,
sure,
right?
Yep.
And also, you know, after the debates, of course, and I know, Valletta, you could jump in here. You know, here in Brevard County, Florida, we're grateful. We live in a great place. And there's so many nonprofits here in our town that give back.
Absolutely.
Whether it's homelessness or whether it's United Way or, you know, we've had them on our show. And I felt good about our situation here in Brevard and how we're placed in our state.
Yeah, I agree. We are very blessed here in Brevard. And one of the greatest things that I like to see is collaboration. Mm. I think it's great when we see our nonprofits coming together. I think it's great when we see churches and religious organizations, everyone lending in a hand in whatever area that they can. working together for all of the problems that we have in our communities. I mean, it's a must. It's not a maybe we should. It's an absolute must that we work together, whether it's feeding people, putting clothes on them, helping children with education, providing tutoring, healthcare. Whatever it is.
We
healthcare,
do it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and
do
so
it.
Many of us, we talk about education and healthcare. We say, you know, those are the pillars of any community, any country, any nation, right? And we want to see more of that. But before we start chatting about that, I know that Anna has been working on so many things. And every time I look at your Facebook, I learn something. I'm like, this woman, this morning I'm looking at TV, and you just talked about the woman in
Polk County,
Alabama.
Oh, in Alabama.
Alabama, who is pregnant
and
got into an altercation with another woman. And then she was shot in the abdomen.
Yeah.
And her unborn baby died. And, of course, we all feel sad about it. That's just tragic.
Absolutely.
But you've been following that case as well. And what are your thoughts about this?
Well, the frustrating part about it is that the person who shot her is not going to be prosecuted because it was an act of self-defense, because it was the pregnant woman that potentially, based on what law enforcement have said, started the fight. And so she's being prosecuted for the death of her, the end of her own pregnancy, which she did not intend. And it's really frustrating. The whole thing is painful because it all could have been avoided completely. But the reality, too, is that we're not lifting up women who are pregnant. We're incarcerating folks versus empowering and supporting them in this moment of crisis. And, you know, Alabama has a law in the books around, you know, from their perspective of these type of situations where they have to prosecute someone. And in my eyes, it's, you know, we should not prosecute anyone. I mean, obviously no one intended for this to be the consequence. And for the woman that wished to become a mother, for her to be prosecuted is just incredibly offensive. And you can't help but also feel that in a state like Alabama, where the health outcomes for women and children are so detrimental, that the state could perhaps focus its policy on supporting women like her versus now potentially even locking her up.
I looked at her. Marsha Jones is her name.
Yeah.
And her pastor of her church was talking about it, too. But the thing is, the elephant in the room is really gun violence, too.
Totally.
Right? And I know Valetta wanted to jump in here as well.
Absolutely, gun violence. I think the focus is in the wrong place at this point. The focus should be, here we have someone who used a gun to hurt someone else who's clearly pregnant. That you know, the focus is on the wrong place. And it is an unfortunate situation. And I think we have to do better and reevaluate the situation.
And anger management, too.
Yeah.
You know, look, when two women get in a fight, it used to be in the old days they were fighting over a boy, a fella, a guy, or something, right? Now people are fighting over things. And oftentimes it leads to poverty. They come from poverty, or education, they're lacking the education, or something is going on in their lives that maybe wasn't addressed, mental illness, who knows what it is.
Yeah.
So it's almost like you have to put value on the person,
like,
and
basic
find
conflict
out.
Resolution, right?
Yes.
Like how to de-escalate versus escalate.
Right, because I mean, something happened for those two ladies to go outside like that, and you know, it used to be you see a pregnant woman, you open the door for them.
Right.
You respect them because they're carrying life, right? And now all of a sudden, this girl is locked up, and I think it's manslaughter charges.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And the other case that we're all following, of course, is what's going on with the migrant children.
Yeah.
Inhumane treatment for people who are seeking refuge, and most of them are actually already running away from drugs and violence and wars and famine and God knows what it is that's happening. And I'm like, okay, I don't know if you read, I think I saw it on your Facebook, $775 a day.
Oh, yeah.
To house one child.
Yeah.
And I was saying, coming from a Caribbean country myself, if you multiply 775 times a week, that's a lot of money just to hand the people who don't qualify for asylum and say, listen, we were going to spend this on your child or yourself in a cage, but we're going to give it to you in cash. Just go home with it.
Well, in the reality, too, is for the unaccompanied minors who right now are being housed in Homestead in our state, there is a process for these young people to have a sponsor and to actually go live somewhere as they are going through the process. I mean, these are kids. These are not, these are folks that, like, are wishing they had the support of parents and guardians. Instead, our nation is debating that it's not even necessary to provide these folks with toothbrushes and soap. I mean, it's basic necessities we're debating right now in our courts. Meanwhile, the asylum process that we do have in place is being totally tossed out the window.
Well, the argument, like, I speak with a lot of people, of course, as you know, I'll be at the gym and somebody will say, like, what is your show about today? And this guy said to me, he said, well, we don't really want them here. They need to go home. And I said, okay, but you do have a process in place for asylum. I agree if someone comes in front of a judge and they go through the proper channels and the judge says, you don't meet the qualifications for asylum, then why not send them home as a family? Mm. Why are you keeping the children separate from the mother and father? Now you're going to send the mother and father home. They're saying that some of the children, they can't find them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when President Trump's administration separated children and their families, there was no plan to put them back together. I mean, there was no policy to even divide them that they were really using. I mean, they found a loophole in the nation's law to do this, and there was absolutely no tracking, no recording, no archiving to bring these families back together. It just wasn't in their
intention. That was brought out in the debate. Was it Julian Castro that talked to? I didn't even know about that loophole, but he was so articulate.
He was.
He talked about that, and he said, well, this is why they can do that, because it's the law.
Yeah.
And so they have to change it.
Yeah. I mean, I thought Julian Castro did an amazing job in the debate. I think he really shined as a powerful advocate and a good candidate, too.
He showed it. So what else? What's in store now for you? You're in Tallahassee, and we're looking at nationally, there's so much going on.
Yeah.
But then in our state, today, everybody knows you can't text and drive.
That's right. New Florida law. Can't text and drive. I purchased a little holder for my phone, so it's like hands-free for me, too. And I'm really trying to remind folks and encourage folks. And I think that's a bill that's been a long time coming. We fought for 3 years to have that passed. Obviously, it was my first year serving in the legislature, so I was really proud that, you know, during my freshman year we can get this done together. It was a huge bipartisan bill, and I know it's going to save lives.
Well, you know, I remember once I had a friend, a physician, and she said, you know, unless they put a law in place, I'm not going to stop.
I know.
It's almost like you just need that slap on the hand to say, don't do it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with our friend Anna Ishkamani, who is the state representative for Orlando District 47. Mm-hmm. She's running again, and she's here just to have a friendly conversation on our show about what's going on nationally and here as well in our state. So, of course, I read the winners and losers, what happened in the state legislature, who won and who didn't. We don't have a lot of time, but tell us some of the things that you were involved with and that we were able to get passed.
Yeah, happy to. I mean, there were a lot of fights that folks probably are aware of, whether it was the efforts to arm teachers, the creation of a seventh voucher program, the creation of a new tollway road. I mean, there were a lot of issues that we fought really hard against as the minority caucus, and you know, kind of left session definitely bruised with all these bills. From my perspective, are going to hurt working families and hurt our immigrant communities and hurt women.
Why are they so anti-woman in Tallahassee?
One thing I will say is more women elected will make a difference. I mean, there was one anti-abortion access bill that moved through the process, and two Republican women actually voted against it. So it just speaks to, you know, when you have more women elected who have these lived experiences, it helps, you know, pass bills that impact women. On criminal justice reform, we did get some really good modest steps. I mean, we increased the petty theft threshold from $300 to $750, so that can help prevent folks from being convicted felons for stealing, you know, small items. We also passed the Dignity Act. We passed legislation that requires menstruation items to be accessible at no cost in all state prisons and jails. So that's a really important step. And unbelievable that wasn't already the law of the land, but that bill was signed into place. We also, you know, passed a really big budget. It was the largest budget in Florida's history, over $91 billion. And part of the budget allocations included an increase in arts and culture funding, which we fought really hard for. And it was at $2.6 million, one of the worst in the country. And we got it to $21 million. And so it's not where we need to be, but it's a step in the right direction. We confirmed dollars for human trafficking prevention organizations. We were able to allocate funds towards our Pulse Memorial Museum in District 47.
Yeah, which you and your sister, beautiful Ida, have been involved in forever.
Absolutely, absolutely. So that was really important.
One of the ones that I read about was the Sanctuary City one. What do they want people to cooperate and do?
Yeah.
Just turn people in?
I mean, the first thing people need to know is that there's no such thing as a sanctuary city in Florida.
It's just like
It's an election tactic.
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
It's politically motivated. And so this bill passed that defined sanctuary policies, and we debated it for days in legislature. It almost didn't pass, and the governor signed it in what felt like a political rally, not like a actual policy event. And it definitely empowers more of like an anti-immigrant fervor. It does also require every county to have a some sort of relationship with ICE to detain folks who are in their custody. And so they have to have a legal agreement with ICE. And it, you know, puts into place different elements around, you know, basically like isolating immigrant communities. Because, you know, my concern always with these type of policies is that, you know, we do have a process for victims of crime at the federal level and witnesses of crime. If they report a crime, they can seek a visa. But when you create this hostile environment, it can be very scary to talk to police, right?
Right. I know, Valetta, you could jump in here too, but how many times, if someone is in the country undocumented, and there's something going on in a domestic violence situation,
exactly,
they won't call the police.
Exactly.
They won't even call.
Even
they
folks
will be
with
abused,
status won't
right?
call police, right?
Yeah. Yes, and it's something that I deal with on a daily basis. We have victims come into our office all of the time with even those that are not documented that want assistance and they want help. They don't call the police because they're afraid.
Right.
They're afraid they might be deported. Exactly. They don't know what's going to happen with the family unit. They don't know how they're going to be able to feed the children if they go forward with trying to get some relief from the court. So definitely it's a barrier, but we encourage them. It's okay that you didn't. Here's what we're going to do moving forward.
Right, and it creates so much anxiety because just imagine if you are in the United States undocumented. And we all know the flesh is weak. People get pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
They have a child or two.
Mm-hmm.
Now, your child is a U.S. citizen, but you're not.
Mm-hmm.
If the father is beating on you night and day and abusing you verbally, mentally, emotionally, physically,
yeah,
you have to take that because you're looking at those little babies that if the police come and they call ICE, you're gone. They will deport you to your country of birth.
Well, we tried so hard to file an amendment for an exception on victims of domestic violence, on just witnesses of crime and victims of crime, and it failed every time.
Right.
Yeah. And there is resistance from the witnesses as well, who mm-hmm. happen to be sometimes family members. You know, we try to avoid the children from having to come to court and to tell, you know, the court what happened. But oftentimes, they're the only witnesses of the children
right.
to witness what's going on. So they need protection as well. So
right.
the victims, the children, like I said, it's a barrier, but it's something that they have to face. They have to make that tough decision.
Yeah.
Do I stay and endure the abuse, or do I go and just pray that the best happens for my situation? And that's a tough place to be in.
Well, it's almost like, you know, we place value on life, right? But it's on certain lives.
Yeah.
We all see, you know, when someone gets kidnapped, a beautiful blonde, blue-eyed girl, Elizabeth Smith, right? And we saw that. And then she was away from her family for so many months, which was terrible what it did to her. But then everybody was concerned about her mental state, the family state, the friends. We have to have psychiatrists talk to the friends, the family, the neighbors. What happened to all the other people in our world that go through such hardships and challenges? Don't we care about their mental state? I mean, these mothers who are beaten up by their lovers or their significant others, whoever it is, now, they have children, too, that are going through this
stuff. And the children who are being detained right now, I mean, their mental capacity, right? Like, they're to have traumatic experiences now that unless we can provide them with the support, it's going to haunt them for the rest of their lives.
But why can't the state legislators get into the building? Because I was looking at TV, mm-hmm. and it said that people, I mean, there were so many people who went to see the children. I mean, if people come to the nursing home where I'm a nurse,
gotta come
you're,
in, right?
you're allowed to come in.
Yeah.
That's the law. You can't
oh, yeah.
say to a family member or somebody who has a concern, what's going on
we
with the elderly? You can walk
state
in.
State prisons, too, as lawmakers.
But why not the children? Why not the detention facilities? That does not make any sense.
It doesn't make sense. And, you know, our barrier is that, you know, they'll tell us all the time it's a federal detention center. So as state lawmakers, we face one barrier at that point. But for members of Congress, they should be able to go in freely. I mean, if it's a federal detention center, the members of Congress have oversight, and because it's private, they use that as a reason to not let anyone in. I mean, it's incredibly offensive and scary that, you know, if everything's fine, then why don't you let folks spontaneously check? I mean, when you operate a health center in this state, ACA,
it's like your
mother-in-law whenever
coming
they
to
want
visit.
To.
It's like even for the mother-in-laws who
I mean,
are coming to visit, people say, "All right, hold on a second, I'll be right down." And
we need to remember too that the undocumented, they pay taxes. Their kids go to your schools, they go to your churches. I mean, they probably even take care of maybe your kids in a daycare. They might be picking your fruits and vegetables. Like, we can't forget too that no person is illegal. Like, these are, and the undocumented, as I'm sure our attorney here knows, they have rights in
That's
this
right.
country.
They absolutely.
Well, I think every human being have rights,
yeah.
right? And people are so concerned about the life in a mother's uterus, womb, whatever you want to call it. Womb. My mother used to say from the womb to the tomb. So the thing is, if you're so concerned about that, what happened to the beating hearts that are already on earth?
Yeah.
The ones who are alive and well and need your assistance. We're saying love both. yeah, take care of both, right?
That's right.
So Anna, you're in Tallahassee, and the dynamics change when you're there, I would think. Because now you have the Democrats, you have the Republicans, yeah, and you have people who are trying to make a difference. What is it like in the cafeteria when you see the other side?
Funny.
They all get along.
Well, I was gonna say one thing that I've been really grateful for in Tallahassee is it is very collegial. It's very, very collegial. There are folks that, you know, we'll have really intense debates on the House floor, and then I'll go up and shake their hand and say, nice debate. You know, so I take a lot of pride in trying to build bridges when we can, but also not be afraid to hold people accountable, which we have to do like minute by minute. But the fact that we can find issues to work together on, I mean, most of the bills we pass in Tallahassee pass on bipartisan lines. It's probably the most heated subjects that don't. And I'll tell you, a lot of the fights in Tallahassee, for me, it's not necessarily party line. Sometimes it's also special interests. Like, it's corporations that are pushing for one bill to move that Democrats are supporting too. And
the lobbyists. I see you went after a couple of the lobbyists.
Oh, yeah.
So how's our dear Governor DeSantis, right? He did a lot of stuff for the environment, which I liked.
Well, he did.
And then
we
saw a few other things coming down.
Yeah.
Was, all right.
I mean, I think for those who tried to brand the governor as a moderate, really failed. I mean, he's not. Rick Scott was one of those.
In the beginning, I thought, wow,
I know.
Is he
but
really?
Remember, Rick Scott had a really low bar for us. And so Ron is definitely better than Rick Scott. But, you know, he allocated more money towards water projects as an environmental example, but there was no proactive bill that passed that actually stops the bleeding in Florida when it comes to environmental conservation and prevention. So, you know, I'm always hopeful we can find common ground. But, you know, this past Friday, he signed the rights restoration bill that makes it more difficult to have your rights restored. I mean, he signed every bad bill. He didn't veto any of these really partisan and dangerous issues. He signed everyone into law.
I see Yvelette is shaking her head about Amendment 4. Mm. I mean, we all worked so hard for that, and we helped our friend Desmond Meade, and we wanted people's rights restored after they've served their time. We want them to be a human being again, right? Not that they weren't in prison, but give them all their rights.
And they should be afforded that opportunity, you know, and it's just unfortunate that we need more education. Bottom line, and we need to keep fighting and keep pushing for it. And when I say education, meaning letting them know that they have a right to tell everyone that they should have that opportunity. They should have their rights restored.
So what it is saying that people have to pay, the felons have to pay their court costs and fees.
Yes.
But here's the thing: there aren't many programs for when people leave prison to get them back into society. You know, to reentry programs, to get a job. Regular people can't even afford a place to live, much less for somebody coming out of prison. You're checking off on a form. Have you ever been arrested or imprisoned?
Yeah.
Right away, you're not going to get a place.
Yeah.
So how are we going to help people to pay their fees, get a job, pay rent, buy a car, put gas in the car, insurance? I mean, we're setting up the people to fail.
Yeah.
And that's where I believe that we need more grassroots organizations to be able to do these types of things. Educate them, show them what they need to do, help them get back on their feet, show them, you know, what organization they should go to instead of just saying, okay, you know, this is what you want and we believe you should have it. Okay, let's give them the tools and empower them to show them that they can do it and where they should go to get it done. Building, having a little seminar at a community center where they could come and get information about how to get their rights restored. Having attorneys like myself doing one-on-one consultations with them and instructing them, okay, this is what needs to happen. This is what we need to do, you know, moving forward.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And keep in mind, there are 3 lawsuits that have been filed on the bill.
The ACLU, I saw
ACLU.
Yeah, I donated to them. I did.
Yep. So we'll see what the you know, it could be a stay on the bill, which gives more time for people to vote, too.
That would be good.
So we'll see what happens.
So we have like 3 or 4 minutes left. So what did you try to get done in Tallahassee that didn't pass? And and tell us a little bit. I mean, of course, bills, they have to go into committees and then it passes or it fails.
Yeah.
We have 3 minutes, so you have to give us your website because you're running again. And just give us like a little insight, how you felt.
So, you know, some of the issues that did not move that we plan to file again include our 100% renewable energy bill. I do believe that climate change is a serious crisis right now, and we have to be center stage in Florida on doing something about it. And right now in the state, there is no goal for us to be 100% renewable. So we filed a 100% renewable bill for Florida to reach that goal by 2050. We're going to refile it and hopefully have good Republican co-sponsors this time. We're also working on new legislation for the state to pilot a rape kit tracking system. Mm-hmm. Other states have been piloting this, which would allow a survivor to actually track their rape kit along the process and know exactly where it's stored, because we do have a backlog in the state we've been going through. But the reality is that for many survivors, if they move, if they haven't decided to prosecute, but might decide within the statute of limitation later, they're going to lack the ability to know how to start. And every county has a different rule of how long they keep kits for, who keeps them. So we want to streamline that process and pilot an online tracking system for our survivors. So, you know, I'm looking forward to the potential to get things done next session. But I will say that, you know, every year is a battle for us.
Yeah, and it looks like the Republicans always get the big policy items through.
They do.
Well, they have more lobbyists or something?
It's a leadership-driven process. So when and that's unfortunate, because you would hope that, you know, if you have a good idea, it moves, right? But the reality is that when a freshman Democrat has a good idea, it rarely moves.
What can we do to help it get moved? Vote.
So you got to always vote, be engaged. But I would also encourage folks to get to know your local elected officials, your state house members, your state senators, call them, email them, get to know them. These are folks that, you know, are going to feel more of the motivation to listen to constituents, even over a colleague sometimes, right? So just know that you have power in this, and so reach out to those folks, let them know, you know, where you stand on these different issues. I will say that there were more than one occasion where an amendment that we sponsored failed, and then my Republican colleague would sponsor the amendment again, and it would pass.
Just worded a little bit differently.
So actually, well, a different name on
well, that's
really
a good thing, right? Because
yeah, they're listening.
So you just have to say, well, you know what? Out of every bad situation comes something good,
right? As long as
right?
it gets done, yeah.
So what's
it gets
your
done.
Website, Anna, so for all our friends who are listening who'd like to donate and
oh,
and maybe
sweet.
Send you some ideas?
Yeah,
and
we always want to hear it.
Concerns?
Absolutely. You know, our campaign website is AnnaForFlorida.com. You're welcome to email us there. My email is just AnnaForFlorida.com. We're also on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. So, yeah, keep in touch. Let us know how we can be of service to you.
And we want to thank Dr. Biggie, my husband, for sponsoring our show today, because we're so proud of you. Not only are you the first Iranian American to go to the
Florida.
State ledge, and you had Nowruz.
Yeah, we had a big Nowruz party in the Capitol, the first ever
Persian New Year
celebration.
Did they understand what was going on when you were walking in with the carpet and everything?
So we had a huge Iranian Persian New Year celebration, and actually 15 lawmakers joined us, including 3 Republicans. So again,
Nowruz is
a lot
the
of
Iranian New Year.
Yeah.
And so Anna had food and music. Did you have music too?
Music, cultural displays. Yeah, we did a resolution marking Nowruz in March as well. So it was really special.
Very cool.
Well, that's wonderful. Now, before we go off air, anything on education? I know somebody had texted me to ask you anything on education in this session.
A few things. I'll be quick. So one is, you know, arming teachers legislation passed. And so now every county can actually decide to arm teachers. And so I encourage folks to contact their school board members and advocate, in my perspective, against that effort. A 7th voucher system was created that takes money directly out of our traditional public schools. I suspect there will be a lawsuit on this, but it's a really dangerous bill because we need to be giving more money to our public schools, not taking more
away.
Well,
we just saw that here in Brevard, where the school board voted not to give the teachers their well-deserved raise.
Well, and that's my
not
next,
very nice.
That's my next point, too, is teacher pay is still one of the lowest in the country. You know, we increased the base student allocation by $75, but right now, per pupil spending is not even close to 2008 pre-recession numbers when you adjust for inflation. So we are not funding our schools well enough.
Do you know the top of your head how much it is per student?
It's like $7,000, like $268, I think. Yeah, per pupil. Yeah, it's like $7,000 instead of $100 right now. Yeah.
That's less than what, I mean, look what they're paying to house the immigrant kids.
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. The math
doesn't
such a good
add
point.
Up.
Yeah, such a good point. So,
we gotta
do better.
The website again.
AnnaForFlorida.com.
Is it number 4 or is it
all spelled out. Yeah,
yeah, and what we love about you, Anna, is what people see is what they get. You do care about
true.
Florida. Actually, you care about the whole world. And the thing is, all the things you work on, you know, reducing gun violence, domestic violence, making sure that women have a choice in their decisions about their bodies, public education, fixing our communities, jobs with dignity and benefits, the environment, everything that you care about, we all care about as well. But the one nice thing about you is you're able to reach over to the other side as well. Oh, you don't demonize people, which is great because everybody's there for the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. We can poke fun at one another and be cheeky once in a while, but you got to respect your colleagues and respect one another.
And I think we should give a shout out to your sister Ida for the wonderful rally she just had.
Oh yeah, Win With Love rally. My twin sister Ida V. Escamani, we're cut from the same cloth. She was the lead organizer on a Win With Love rally that was counter to President Trump's kickoff in Orlando, Florida about 2 weeks ago.
It was really love. It was fun. I loved it.
I was going to see you there too.
Yes. So Ellen, take us away and then we'll go to the second segment soon.
Well, we have been on Facebook Live here almost the entire segment. So thank you all for tuning in and for all the questions that you had. I hope I answered everything for you. But we're going to take a quick station break to hear from our sponsors and we'll be right back with more information.
Portions of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Portions of Sita and Friends is brought to you by Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture Store inside the Merritt Square Mall at the Sears Wing. Save big on furniture working with a flexible family-owned store with all the brands you love, from Ashley, Serta, Coaster, and so and more. Brand new, warranties as well, and delivery and haul-away available at a fraction of the cost of most stores and delivered in 7 to 10 days. Free, no credit checking and financing, and free interior design. The owner, Scott Palmer, has been in the mattress and furniture business for over 30 years, and Cloud 9 has been serving Central Florida for 7 years now. Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture Store, available at 321-459-2473. Again, call them 321-459-2473 or visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With 3 locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We are here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We had such a wonderful first half hour with Anna Ishkamani.
Yes, and we had it all on Facebook Live, most of it.
Yes,
we tried. And with Valita Cameron as well.
And now we have a really great second segment plans with Valita Cameron, right? Did I say it correct?
Yes, thank you.
Valita, it's so pretty. I was saying Valetta, but it's Valita. And Valita is an attorney here in town, and she does so much for the children in our district. Very powerful stuff. I don't know what I did with your bio, so I'm just going to have you talk to our listeners. She was raised in Melbourne, actually, and you went to Flagler College in St. Augustine, earned your bachelor's degree, and then you went to A&M University for law school. And after law school, take us from there.
All right. So after law school, I decided to come back to Brevard County, my home. My family is here, and my support unit is here. And so I figured this is where I wanted to be. And so when I came back to Brevard, I hit the ground running, started volunteering at Brevard County Legal Aid, which is where I am currently. I've been a staff attorney at Brevard County Legal Aid for 3 years now. And so I handle...
I think you have to speak up a little bit more.
Sure. I handle...
She has such a sweet voice, but it's soft.
I handle domestic violence cases, dependency cases, and also handle a little family law while I'm there. So in the meantime, that's what I've been doing the past 3 years.
How did you get started in this field? Because, I mean, did you always want to be an attorney?
I didn't, actually. I would say I was probably a junior at Palm Bay High School, right there in Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
And I took a course, just a random course called Law Studies. And, you know, I didn't know too much about law at the time. It just seemed like an interesting course. And I took the course and fell completely in love with it. I felt like that was what I was called or meant to do at that point, taking this class and then continuing to take classes and learning that if I wanted to make a difference, I need to be able to know how to do it and be able to use the skills that I believe I've been blessed with to be able to help other people. So that's when it started, my junior year in high school. And from there, I sought out my quest to go to law school and eventually become an attorney.
So who was your mentor, your parents or someone else in the community?
I had such a huge support, Sita, when I tell you from my parents.
That's what we all need, right?
We do, and it's so important. I'm going to talk about that later, mentorship, how important and vital it is in a child's life. But I had my mother, my father, my pastor, my youth pastor, family members that were there to be supportive of me and my decisions and helping me guide me along the way.
So yeah, lots of encouragement.
Lots of encouragement.
Yeah. And so now, legal aid, you're doing a lot of work with foster children, and Lord knows it's hard enough to be a foster child.
Yes.
So tell us about some of the work you're doing.
Sure. So I am a registry attorney where I am appointed to cases for children who have special needs. So if they are in foster care, and when I say foster care, that means they have been dependent and they have been abused, neglected, or abandoned. So that's what I mean when I say they're in foster care. And because they have special needs, they're appointed an attorney, and that's where I come in. So what I do, my work for children, is to represent these children's legal interest and also make sure that they have the needs and all the necessary tools they need to make it. So we're talking children from all ages, infants all the way to 18-year-olds and even post-18-year-olds who need support. And there's so many different areas, from medication prescriptions, from therapy, from finding places to live after they've aged out of foster care. Those are some of my, you know, goals and duties and responsibility as their attorney ad litem is what we call it.
Yeah, and it seems when the children reach 18 and they age out is what it's called.
Yeah.
That's another story by itself, because a lot of them, they don't know where they're going after that point.
They really don't, Sita, and that is what we're working on. That is my passion right now, is trying to find places for these young people to go, because not only do they need a place to live once they age out of foster care, they still need the support that they're receiving now while they're in the state's care. So that could be counseling, that could be mentoring. They need basic skills. I mean, I think about myself as a college student and coming out, it's not easy. And that's with me having all of my faculty. So I couldn't just imagine of coming out of foster care, not really having the stability, especially some of my clients have been in foster care for many years and have been bounced from home to home to home. So they never really achieved permanency. They never really achieved stability. So for them to age out at 18 and pretty much you're on your own, that's a lot. That's really tough.
Right. And a lot of them, they're placed temporarily in homes with people who have biological children. And now the foster child has to leave, but the biological children don't.
Right.
So it comes down to what? Maybe money, because maybe they don't have money for college, vocational school. And you've been helping with that as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we have, when I spoke earlier about why collaboration was so important, there are great resources here in Brevard, such as Career Source Brevard, that has a program like NextGen. NextGen is a great program for these youth in between that age group, 8 to 21, that kind of shows them what they need to do, helping them with resume skills, helping them with job training skills, interviewing skills, budgeting skills, whatever skills they need to know in order to make that transition. Transition is so important. To go along with having a place to live, they need those skills so they can be able to survive and do basic things as adults. But yes, working with youth, one thing I have to stress is mentorship. Even after they're aged out of foster care, mentoring is so vital. It's so important. And they need that support, someone that can kind of guide them and say, okay, this is the way you should go. Or maybe you should consider this career. Have you thought about the Job Corps? Have you thought about going to a two-year university? Have you thought about dual enrollment? Giving them options, opportunity.
And vocational school is
vocational,
trade.
Yes.
I mean, how many people are not prepared for college, but you give them something to take apart and put it back together again, they can.
They can do it.
They can do it because their brain is wired. Everybody's, they're different, right?
Absolutely.
Now, one of the things I noticed, and Ellen, we've done so many shows on this before, the homelessness, the situation here in Brevard with so many people being homeless and having affordable housing. And I would think if someone is with a foster child, and now they turn 18 and they have to go off to college or vocation or trade, they need a place to live. So what happens when children can't afford a place to live?
Well, that's the problem we're having now is, fortunately for these children that are in foster care, they continue to receive help or can continue to get funding all the way up until their 21st or 22nd birthday. But unfortunately, it's not quite enough for them to get their own place. And that's the problem. So they're getting some funding. But, you know, if you all have looked, to get an apartment in Brevard County, a one-bedroom by itself is about $950 to $1,000.
And you have to have first, last, and security.
First, last, and security. And these kids don't have that. So that's a problem. So what do we do? Well, we're reaching out right now. Our office has been collaborating with other organizations to see what we can do to help these young people. They really do need a place to stay. We don't want them to become a part of that statistic of the homelessness population here in Brevard County.
And you know what the thing is, we hear so much when people become pregnant and everybody wants to help with the babies, and I think that's wonderful. We should help, right? But what happens when children hit 18 and tragically no one is interested then in helping them? I mean, it's still a child. It's still somebody who needs help, right?
It absolutely. And what's frustrating is because the person turns 18, it's automatically, okay, you're good. You're on your own. And it's just not, that's just not the case. They could be 18 age-wise, but where are they mentally?
So some of the things, I was, after I spoke to you last week, I was reading about it, and is that some of the things you could do to help a child who is aging out of the foster care system become a school or college tutor, which is what you're doing. Donate school supplies to a local foster care or an agency, develop a college or a scholarship fund, teach money skills, basic skills, how to live. Are you seeing a lot of these children who are aging out have the basic skills to survive?
They don't. We're trying and we are making efforts to increase it because those independent living skills are absolutely necessary. So when I mentioned collaboration, once again, finding these organizations that are willing to open up their doors and say, you know what, we're going to hold a budgeting workshop. You know what, we're going to hold a workshop on financial literacy. You know what, we're going to hold a workshop on hygiene. Basic things that these kids need, they're able to get, and that's what we're working on now, is providing these services to them more, as much as possible, so that they'll be able to feel like they are ready to go.
Yeah, I read, I know we've talked about this before, where a child who aged out of the foster system didn't even know how to open a bank account, didn't even know how to write a check. So I know, Ellen, you and I had talked about this before, about junior achievement, how they used to come into the schools and teach all these things. I mean,
well, there used to be a home ec class, and it didn't have to be cooking and shop. You know, those were usually the home ec that I remember in school. Even early on, it was more of, you know, how to balance a checkbook and how to make a budget, and you know, how to pay bills. And even though we may have used Monopoly money, but it was like a week long of a session where it was like you ran a household.
Right.
And we don't do that anymore. How do kids learn how to do that? Because unfortunately, the parents in a lot of cases,
well, not everybody is lucky enough to have someone in their home or in their friends and family circle who's going to teach them these things. So, Valita, for our friends who are tuning in, we're talking with our friend Valita Cameron, who's an attorney here in town and does so much for foster children with legal aid, just helping in our town to try to give every child an opportunity. And today we're talking about those who age out of foster care and what we're doing for them. So education is so important.
Absolutely.
And you're an advocate not just for a two-year college degree or four-year, but also skills and trade. So talk a little bit about that.
Absolutely. What's so important that I'm finding in my job is educating and letting the students know, letting the children know what their options are. They don't have to go down the traditional four-year university route where they end up spending all of this money for a career or a degree that doesn't get them anywhere, especially if they're, like you mentioned earlier, they can take apart a computer and put it back together. You know, they have other special skills. So what we're trying to do in our program is we're trying to steer youth towards their passions and what their skill sets are. And some of that may be the vocational route. And so we're steering them in that direction, steering them to the dual enrollment, taking 2 years at, you know, Eastern Florida State College and then going off and spending another 2 years in the university if that's what's in their best interest. But we're trying to give them more options to let them know that that's not the only route you have to go. We also or telling the telling the teens about the Job Corps. Job Corps is a great opportunity for some of our youth. It just really depends on the child. So that's why, once again, mentorship is so important.
And you know, in the old days, you used to have the apprenticeships, right?
Yes.
Where a child would come out of high school and the parents recognize that this child is not going to go to college or whatever, but they find a good fit. A auto body shop, an air conditioning and refrigeration, which my brother did, and he did extremely well with that. Okay. Or other areas where a child could go and they could learn from someone, and that's their trade, right?
Yeah. And we're missing that here. I think we need more apprenticeships. We need them to come back, especially to Brevard. It would be extremely helpful. I believe that we can really impact these youth by exposure. The more they're exposed to what you just talked about, the better they feel like, oh, man, I can do that. I'm good at this. They just need some inspiration and they need some support. Yeah. And that's where we come in as a community, whether it's a church or whether it's a nonprofit. This is where we can come in. We can work with organizations like Club Esteem. Volunteerism is so vital to not just children in foster care, but all of the youth when we're talking about education. Whatever way we can help, tutoring, workshops, seminars, financial support, whatever it may be, I think it's the key for success.
Yeah. Well, I know that there's something that you, Ms. Valletta, care so much about, which is a college prep.
Yes.
And you're going to be doing one of your classes where you will be teaching children how to fill out their forms, how to apply for their scholarships, grants, loans, whatever. So tell our listening audience on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Sure.
A little bit about the college prep. Is it a session that you're having?
Yes, I'll tell you about it. The College Prep is originally the brainchild from myself and my pastor, Bishop Clark, from Palm Bay, Florida. And the goal of College Prep is to enhance the children or the teenagers' exposure and understanding about how to prepare themselves for college. So for the past 8 years, we've held a program at Florida Tech called Planning for Your Future. And it's a yearly seminar where we bring in colleges such as Eastern Florida. We've brought in University of Central Florida. Florida Tech has representatives there as well. And what we do is we pretty much go step by step on all the steps they need to do to get into college. So we're talking 7th graders through 12th graders and their parents. It's an action-packed full day, usually on a Saturday. This year it's going to be September 28th. From 10 to 3, and we will help the students identify scholarships that are local to Brevard, also national scholarships. We're also going to be doing career assessments to kind of guide the students and give them an idea of, hey, you know, what career choice might be for me, because a lot of these students don't know yet what they want to be. So we usually start there. Let's start with the strength, start with where your strongest points are, and from there we move on. Also at the seminar, we have motivational speakers. Last year, we had attorney Alton Edmond come in, and he did a phenomenal job just inspiring the young people about college life.
Yeah, and he understands. He comes from a background where he depended on his aunties and cousins and grandmas and everybody else to help him. I love Alton. He's been on our show before, too.
Awesome.
But, you know, you're right, because as it is, children who live with their parents or a single parent or whatever, when they go off to college, they face challenges and tribulations. Just imagine children who've been neglected and abused and now having to face that by themselves, but they have nobody to be there for them if they fall. So it's nice to have somebody like you who are saying, listen, you may not have a mother and father with a bank account and a college plan, but this is what's available. Because I think that the issue is a lot of people don't understand that there is help available. You just have to know where the resources are.
Exactly. And that's where education is key. Exposure is key. We have to be more visible so they know what's available, which is why we have the seminar every year. We offer it to the community. We send out notices in the mail. We put it in the newspaper. We want everyone to take advantage of it. It's a free seminar. And these opportunities, we need more of them, but once again, it really does take collaboration from everyone. It really does.
How often do you do these seminars? Is it once or twice a year?
We do it once a year, but throughout the year, what we offer is free one-on-one mentoring. So if there's a student who comes to the seminar or a parent who comes to the seminar and they say, you know what, we're going to need some extra help. Do you mind taking on myself or my child? And we say yes. There is nobody we have turned away and said no to. So we are making ourselves available to the public, to the community that needs the assistance, because all it takes is one person to make a difference.
It does. And do you partner with anyone in Brevard? Because I would think the Brevard Public Schools, are you able to send home a flyer or something with
the
children?
Yes, we have. We have connections with a few of the high schools that know about our program and also promote the program, as well as some local churches and some local nonprofit organizations that they pass out flyers and they make announcements. And I would say last year we had well over 100 attendees.
That's pretty good. And here's the most important question. Is there food?
Always.
Because if you tell people there's food, they'll come.
Food rules.
Yeah, but you know, but how wonderful is that to have such a session like this? Because I know even for my own children, although, I mean, we were home, we were with them all the time, I didn't know when I got that FAFSA. And remember, back in the day, you didn't have the computer. You had the FAFSA paperwork to fill out, and you had to call your accountant, yes, get your tax returns. And it was like, oh, well, question A to B to C, you have to put in this and that. And I was like, oh, my God. Just the idea of filling out that form alone was so intimidating.
Yes.
And they wanted everyone to fill it out, whether you were getting a loan or not, which I couldn't understand. Is it still the same way?
Well, it's different now that it's online, but the burden of it and the anxiety, no, has not changed. I wish I could tell you that that has, but no, it's still a requirement, and it's still something that has to be done, but it's something that we help with. Once
yes.
again,
yeah.
we have instructors that come to the seminar and tell them what they need to do, how to fill it out. And like I said, it's for parents. We really encourage parents to come with the students, because there's some things, especially when it comes to finances and the FAFSA, that the parents need to be aware of.
Yes.
That the children don't understand.
Your tax return. You have
exactly.
to bring it. And here's the thing. Well, we all talk about why some schools are not doing well, why some schools are doing exceedingly well, exceptionally. But here's the thing. The one thing we see with the children who do well and exceed and excel is parent involvement. Of course, you're dealing with a different segment. You have children who are in the foster care system you're helping, and children who are abused and neglected and all that. But what is it about certain families, certain areas, certain communities that they're so involved? They will show up with that child, pen in hand, to fill out the forms, get involved, and others just don't care. How can we get more parents to say, this is your DNA. This is your child. You brought this child into the world. You are responsible to help fill out these forms, get a place for them to live, go to college, vocational, trade, whatever it is. What is happening with our society when we're seeing this, Valletta?
Well, what needs to happen is we have to let them know that they can do it. And I think a lot of the resistance, especially with our more disadvantaged groups, if they didn't go to school and they didn't feel accomplished, they are less likely to push that motivation upon the child. So I think if we can inspire the parents, like, look, it may not have happened to you, but look at what you can do for your child. They just need a little motivation. They need to see that it can happen. It may be a financial issue. Well, guess what? We have scholarships specifically for your child that you wouldn't have to worry about paying a penny out of your pocket. I think once the mindset changes from the parent's perspective, especially if it's a parent that's never gone to college and they're afraid, they don't know anything about the process, they don't know how much it might cost, if we can enlighten them, and this is what we try to do at our program, that it is possible they can go to college, they can go to a technical school, they don't have to worry about money because there are resources available for them, and we're going to show them what those resources are and how they can get it.
How to apply, most important.
Absolutely.
So it always, all our shows, it always comes down to awareness and education.
That's right.
And who you know too, because a lot of people, they have information, and what we all know, knowledge is power, right? But so many people know something, but they won't tell the other person. I see you shake.
Yes.
I mean, you've seen that too, right?
Whether
it's a workplace, whether it's a family member, whether it's a neighbor, people sometimes are selfish with sharing information. What is it? They don't want somebody else to get ahead?
Yeah, and it's unfortunate because we should all want each other to progress. We should all want someone to go higher and further than us. We should always want to encourage each other to be the best and to do great things. So for us to withhold, or anybody to withhold information, especially as something as simple as college information, it's just really a misjustice, and it's really sad. But what can we do? All we can do is, I know for myself personally, that's one of the reasons why I came back to Brevard, is so I can give back, so I can help these people that are my family, some of them give up
on themselves. And I really love doing shows like this where, you know, we always do shows about nonprofits and people who want to sell a book, business, whatever. But when you, what you're doing for the community is enriching the children in this community. And a lot of them will come back. When you give now, they're going to come back. They're going to open a business or become a lawyer like you, teach, whatever it is. And I do find that a lot of them, and I speak with so many people because, you know, I work in a profession where I work with a lot of nursing assistants and, you know, janitors, and I'm a nurse. I talk to a lot of family members, and people would say, well, I didn't have enough money to send my child to college. And then I'll say, but do you understand there are resources available? And they're like, right. Well, nobody told me. Right. So if somebody wanted to get a hold of you, how can they get a hold of you to register for one of the, for the session that's coming up?
Sure.
It's in September, right?
It's September 28th from 10 to 4. And the email that you can reach me at is trmcollegeprep@gmail.com.
And what about businesses? If there's a business owner that's considering helping, they can send you an email as well.
Absolutely.
Are there any right now that's actively helping that you guys are recruiting to help with the seminar?
Yes, we have a few churches that are going to be actively helping, and we have sponsorships from Publix right now, so which is a good thing. We always like to get sponsorships.
You'll get subs for the children.
Yes, yes.
Now, here's one of the things that I found a lot of kids were lacking. They didn't have transportation. Do they have a way to get the children to and from the seminar, the church,
yes,
where it's been held?
Yes. Last year, we were able to provide transportation for students who were in Cocoa. And so that worked out really well. And if it's needed, we will do it again this year.
So you need people who are willing to come forward and be a friend, teach children how to communicate, social skills, any kind of skill that would help somebody to move forward in life.
Absolutely. That and mentorship.
You need mentors.
And so, mentors.
So you're taking people, if someone wants to be a volunteer as well, they can email you as well.
Absolutely. We welcome volunteers, anyone with a skill set and a desire.
So one more time, you could give us the email and also give us the website for where you, with the legal aid and so all the stuff you're doing, if you
sure.
would like to.
The email is trmcollegeprep@gmail.com. And questions about legal aid, our website is www.bcla.org.
Somebody just sent me a text and said that you need to teach the foster children how to cook and prepare a meal and the importance of a good diet as well.
Absolutely. That is a part of our independent living skills packet as well.
I guess they're seeing a lot of people go hungry and in addition to homeless.
It's true.
So that's
it's
good.
Happening.
Well, Ellen, I'm telling you, we have done such wonderful shows the last few months, and I would like to have Valetta come back again.
Valetta,
you know, your voice is so common. Yeah, I could see you talking to a child and they're just listening to you and not their parent.
Thank you.
And thank you for all that you're doing with Truth Revealed Ministries, where Bishop Clark,
yes.
right,
yes.
is. And we will make sure we get all the information out. We did this whole Facebook Live. So thank you all for tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We'll see you next week.